Today on Family Talk.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Family Talk, which is a division of the James Dobson Family Institute. I'm your host, Dr. James Dobson, and we're here for you and for your family day after day. In Genesis chapter 1, we're reminded that we were formed in the very image of God and created as males and females separately. Today, we're going to continue with the conversation that began on yesterday's program, which featured Dr. Tim Clinton. He's, of course, the executive director of the Dobson Family Institute, and author Nancy Piercy. They discussed the reprehensible view that is really a product of what Nancy refers to as a low view of the body. What that means is that sexual perversion, premarital sex, surgical efforts to change our sexual assignment, and many other evidences of it represent no moral significance whatsoever. Because they don't believe in God, therefore we're not accountable to Him. It contradicts what is taught in Scripture about morality and righteousness. Nancy and Tim go on to discuss this issue with which they and I heartily disagree, and so does this ministry. We are accountable for our behavior to God Himself, and we're held to a very high moral standard. Well, that's the topic of today's broadcast. We're going to finish it today, and I think you're going to appreciate what Dr. Tim Clinton and Nancy Piercy have to say.
Thank you, Dr. Dobson. And joining me on this edition of Family Talk is Nancy Piercy. You heard from her yesterday. She works as a professor of apologetics and director of the Center for Christian Worldview and is a scholar in residence at Houston Baptist University. Nancy's a two-time Evangelical Christian Publishers Association, ECPA, winning author. She also founded Breakpoint Radio and serves as the executive editor. Nancy studied Christian worldview under someone we all love, the late Francis Schaeffer. He, of course, was the great theologian and philosopher who had a tremendous impact on Christianity. She has been recognized as America's preeminent evangelical Protestant female intellectual. Fascinating discussion yesterday. Nancy, thanks for coming back and joining us here on Family Talk.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Nancy, yesterday we talked a little bit about a very important subject, and that is this body-person dualism. Can you reset the table for us? What does that mean, and why do we need to understand this? Why do parents need to understand it? Why do our young college-age children need to understand this?
Right. What many people don't realize is that the secular ethic actually rests on a very divided concept of the human being on all of these cutting-edge moral issues, whether it's abortion, euthanasia, homosexuality, or transgenderism. All of them rest on the idea that there's this separation between the person and the body. That's how secular ethics talks about it. So take the most obvious example. In abortion, what bioethicists say today is that the fetus is human from the moment of fertilization. Most people don't realize that bioethicists actually agree today that the fetus is human from conception. But what they argue is it's not a person until it develops certain mental abilities, certain level of cognitive functioning. If you can be human at one point, but not a person until sometime later, then clearly these are two separate things. The problem is, of course, if you don't define being a person by being biologically human, then what is personhood based on? Every ethicist out there has their own definition. It becomes purely arbitrary, purely subjective. And when their definition is written into law, then their personal, private views are imposed on all of the rest of us. Hmm. And people say, wait a minute, Christians can't bring their ethical views into the public square because they're imposing their private views. Well, it turns out really today, it's the opposite. Christians base their definition of human life on the science, on biology. It's objective. It's empirically knowable. It's scientifically testable. It's the secular view that today is based on purely private values, purely private views, personal definitions of when personhood appears. And so we need to turn the table on this.
Yeah.
It's the Christian view that's scientific.
And the insanity of it, Nancy, is the more they press in that direction, the more chaotic, the more of a spin there really is. I'm just thinking even about gender dysphoria. You get to a place where these gender identities, what is it, the New York City recognizes some, what, nearly 30 different gender identities now? It's like, when does it stop? Where does the logic come in? And how do you really understand this debate that's going on between body and person dualism? That's the real issue. That's the real challenge. Nancy, I want to ask you, in today's broadcast, we're going to go a little bit further in the weeds here and talk about even casual sex and pornography. Can we start there for a moment and how this impacts our understanding, the modern day sexualized craziness that we're experiencing out there?
Yeah, that's a good point. The hookup culture is based on this dichotomy or division between the body and the person. Think of it this way. The hookup culture has a very defined script. Young people know this script very well, even if they don't like it very much. They know that the rules of the game are no love, no relationship, no commitment. There's a researcher named Donna Freitas who interviewed hundreds of college students, and she found that privately they admit that they find their meaningless sexual encounters disappointing, that they feel hurt and lonely, that they wish they knew how to create a genuine relationship in which they are known and loved as true persons. What's interesting is critics of the hookup culture will often say it gives sex too much importance, but in reality, it gives sex too little importance. I was reading Rolling Stone magazine, had an interview with a young man who said, and this is a direct quote, he said, "Sex is just a piece of body touching another piece of body. It is existentially meaningless." The secular view says all we are is bodies, right? The material world is all that exists. And so it's easy to think that they have too high a view of the body. But in actuality, it's too low a view of the body. In my book, Love Thy Body, I have a lot of quotes from young people that are very poignant. One was a young college student named Alicia, and she said, "Hookups are very scripted. You learn to turn everything off except your body. You make yourself emotionally invulnerable." And so that's that divide. There's this idea that you can reduce sex to merely physical drives, that the human being is a physical organism driven by sheer physical drives and instincts with no higher purpose. No wonder the hookup culture is leaving a trail of wounded people. They're trying to live out a worldview that does not fit who they really are. It's actually the Christian worldview that says you are meant to be holistic in your sexual relationship, that the most intimate and complete physical relationship is meant to be within the context of the most holistic and complete and intimate personal relationship, which is the whole person commitment of marriage. There's no fragmentation. There's no division. You don't have to separate your body from your emotions. You laughed when I talked about Rolling Stone magazine, but Rolling Stone magazine had another article that I quote in Love Thy Body, and it's fascinating. Again, it was a college student who said the mistake people make is they think that there are two separate elements in a relationship. The one is physical and the other is emotional. And they pretend that there are clean lines between them.
And there's not. The whole interpersonal neuroscience world, too, is taking us to a deeper understanding of what really is happening when people come together, even in casual sex, that it gets scripted right deep into the brain, and it impacts them. It does. And so with this mindset, then, we begin to understand how we can get lost in that and how it can actually kill or destroy the body, how it can kill or destroy love and personhood, can it? Nancy, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Well, again, you see, science is on the side of Christianity. We are discovering the hormones like oxytocin and vasopressin and the role that these play in sexual relationships.
Yes.
They are hormones that lead us to bond with other people. And isn't this what Paul was saying in the New Testament?
Yes, yes.
When he said, even if you unite with a prostitute, You become one with her in body.
Yes.
One Christian ethicist puts it this way. She says, translates what Paul says in these words. She says, don't you know that when you sleep with someone, your body makes a promise, whether you do or not? And this is why the hookup culture is so damaging, because people keep breaking that bodily promise. And that's why breakups are so painful, that young people are developing a cynical attitude. The Christian view is in line with science. Our bodies are in tune with the biblical ethic.
You know, Nancy, after 10, 20 years of people coming out of the hookup culture, I see them in therapy where they're numb. They don't even really know what love is. It's just so confusing, and they can't get this integrated whole going with the person they love, the person who's in their life. That's a sad thing. We talk about subjects like sexual anorexia and more. Let's talk about pornography and how this view that you're talking about influences your perception, understanding of what's happening to us when we view pornography. And think about, what is it, the number one population viewing pornography are young boys, 12 to 17 years old. Can you imagine the impact it's having on their future of their relationships and this integratedness that we're talking about that's important to God and who they are before Him?
Exactly. Even pornography has the addictive power that it does, because it literally changes the chemistry of our brains. Pornography floods the brain with dopamine and other chemicals. And when that happens repeatedly, it actually rewires the brain's reward pathway.
Yes.
This is what brain scientists refer to as neuroplasticity. And you probably have heard the phrase, neurons that fire together,
wire together. You bet.
Yeah, you got it. And so eventually the brain is overwhelmed by the chemical overload. It shuts down some of its dopamine receptors, and that's why the porn viewer, the person watching porn, does not get the same high and has to seek out more hardcore porn to feel the same effect. And that's why porn is addictive. So again, the latest science is confirming that the human being is a unified whole, that this dualism or divide between body and person is not true to who we are. The reason all the sex education aimed at young people, why is that so necessary? It's because they do not, by nature, thrive on casual, meaningless sexual encounters. They do not thrive on pornography, a depersonalized sex. They crave emotional intimacy and fidelity and relationship. And again, we need to always be bringing the Christian ethic back to this is really what fits who we are. This is how human beings have been designed.
Our special guest today, fascinating discussion, Nancy Piercy, best-selling author. The book we're talking about is Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality. I'm telling you, this is a must-read book for serious Christians. And this is a book you've got to get in the hands of your children. It's critical in this day and hour. Nancy, I want to talk about this discussion around homosexuality then. No wonder the debate has really centered around whether or not it's biologically determined or genetically related or what have you. The body, however, I think you say, has a built-in purpose for the other sex. And that's where the conflict comes up in the discussion of homosexuality. And I want to move right into gender confusion, because I think that's a hot button issue of our day.
The secular view on gender illustrates most clearly this divide between the body and the person, because the transgender activists argue explicitly that your gender has nothing to do with your biological sex. And let me personalize this, because my book, Love Thy Body, has so many personal stories. And one of the most poignant is the story that starts the chapter on transgenderism. It's a story of a young boy I call Brandon, who clearly had gender dysphoria from a very young age. Mm-hmm. Before he was even walking, his babysitter said to his mother, "He's too good to be a boy."
I read that.
By which she meant, you know, he's quiet and sweet-natured and gentle and compliant, and the things that we stereotypically associate with girls. In preschool, when his mother picked him up, invariably he was playing with the little girls, not with the boys. already in elementary school, he was coming to his parents weeping and saying, I don't feel like a boy. I think the way girls do. I'm interested in things girls are. God should have made me a girl. By age 14, he was scouring the internet for information on sex change therapy. Fortunately, he decided it would not give him what he wanted because it would not make him a girl. As scientists tell us today, every cell has a sex. You can't change every cell in your body. But what did his parents do? You know, what do you do as a parent if your child comes to you saying, God should have made me a girl, or your daughter comes saying, God should have made me a boy? What his parents did, first of all, was they made sure he knew they loved him just the way he was. When I was in college, I had a friend who was gay, and he said, I was always interested in art and music, and my dad was baffled and kept trying to push me into football and to other more stereotypically masculine things. Well, these parents did not do that. Brandon's parents let him know they loved him the way he was, that he could be a gentle, sweet-natured, relational, emotional boy, and that God had perhaps equipped him for one of the caring professions, for being a psychologist or counselor. They also, and they took him through personality tests, like the Myers-Briggs personality test, to show that it's perfectly possible to be on the far end of being emotional and sensitive and still be completely masculine, just like it's possible for a girl to be on the opposite end, to be aggressive and assertive and take charge and be still completely feminine. They actually took him through my book, Total Truth. I have a chapter there on the historical development, chapter 12, on the historical development of concepts of masculinity and femininity. And they showed him that these cultural concepts can change over time. They're historically contingent, and so he did not need to feel constrained to fit into whatever stereotypes happen to be popular today. He felt very much like he didn't fit the John Wayne masculinity stereotype, and that was okay. So again and again, they just affirmed him. He was a non-gender-conforming boy, but that did not mean he was a girl. Scientific research has shown that the most consistent correlation with kids who end up identifying as either gay or transgender is non-conforming behavior in childhood. And so when we have non-gender-conforming children, the most important thing we can do is to keep affirming that even though they don't fit the current stereotypes, God has equipped them for the calling he has for them, and it's perfectly okay for them to not fit the normal stereotypes. And it's important in the church to have that message as well. Based on Brandon's story, I can tell you for sure, young people feel the gender stereotypes, especially in church. Brandon felt especially out of tune when he was at church. He felt like he was not accepted as a non-gender-conforming boy. Mm-hmm. So in our Christian homes and churches, we need to be very careful to reach out to kids who are not fitting the normal stereotypes and making sure we affirm them, we support them. The message they're going to be getting, if Brandon had been in a secular school, a public school, I have to tell you, he would have been transgender. There's no doubt. There's just no doubt. But he was homeschooled. And he was in a Christian family. That's the only reason he was able to avoid that message. Our young people have experienced tremendous pressure today that if in any way gender nonconforming, that they are at least non-binary and probably either homosexual or transgender.
Nancy, we're fighting the clock, unfortunately, but you present, I think, an intellectual and a very compassionate message in your book, Love Thy Body. I know you tell heart-rending stories, stories that I often hear behind a closed door, and where parents pour out their heart, where young men and women share their stories, and they're confused about this divide between body and personhood, even more, who God is in the midst of all this. Nancy, I want us to close out with words of tenderness from you, because I know that's your heart toward our listeners. To those who are out there struggling right now, they get it. They know they're struggling. We've got some family issues or challenges. We've got friends, loved ones who are in the battle. And by the way, we're trying to deal compassionately with this political divide that's going on. Talk to us, bring us home here, and close us out with a word of encouragement.
Yeah, let me focus on the homosexual issue because I hear that most often still from Christian families. Many young people have picked up the message, God made me gay. What do we say if a young person says, God made me gay? I talked to a former homosexual once, and he had a good answer to that. He said, if God makes some people gay, then God has played a cruel joke on them. He has engineered their minds and emotions for attraction to the same sex, but he's created their physiology, their biology, to be in direct opposition to that attraction. Does God create that kind of internal conflict, that kind of internal division? I would say that that is a result of the fall. Conflict, alienation, self-estrangement is a product of the fall. And so what we need to help people see is that if you experience that opposition between body and mind, you know, today the message is the mind wins. But the Christian view is that we should respect and honor our body. I think a lot of Christians even have lost the sense of the importance of our body. One of my students put it this way. Growing up in the church, I was always taught spirit good, body bad.
Yes.
And when I say that in my lectures, I always get a lot of people saying, yep, that's
yep.
it.
Yep.
The reason is that Christians have lost touch with our own heritage. The Christian church was born into an ancient Greek and Roman culture that also devalued the material world, just like modern secularism does. So for different reasons, the early church was facing philosophies like Platonism and Gnosticism that treated this world as a realm of evil and corruption. Gnosticism taught that the world was a creation of a low-level deity, an evil god. After all, no self-respecting deity would demean himself mucking about with matter. And they said that the body was the prison house of the soul. That was their words. In this historical context, Christianity was nothing short of revolutionary. It taught that the material world was created by the supreme deity, by a good God, and therefore it is intrinsically good. At the time, Christianity's greatest scandal was the idea that the supreme deity had entered into the realm of matter and taken on a physical body. So the incarnation is the ultimate affirmation of the dignity of the human body. And when Jesus was executed on a Roman cross, we might say he did escape from the physical realm, which is what Gnosticism said we should aspire to do. But what did he do then? He came back in a physical body. To the ancient Greeks, this was not spiritual progress. This was regress. And that's why Paul says the concept of a bodily resurrection is utter foolishness to the Greeks. And at the end of time, God is not going to scrap the material world as if he made a mistake the first
no,
time around.
Not.
He's going to renew it and
yes,
restore it and create a new heavens and earth, which is why the Apostles' Creed from the beginning has affirmed the resurrection of the body. This is an astonishingly high view of the physical realm. Christians need to realize there is nothing like it in any other religion or philosophy. And so we can confidently talk to our non-Christian friends and equip our children to talk to their secular friends with the confidence of knowing that Christianity is based not on a negative view. We don't need to be defensive about it. It's based on a high view of the value and dignity and beauty of the physical world because it's created
Nancy.
By a good God.
I love that, Nancy. Thank you for being with us. You know, probably the very last paragraph you wrote has something of significance here. You wrote, Christian communities then should strive to become safe havens where people witness the beauty of relationships reflecting God's own commitment and faithfulness to us all. Nancy, fascinating discussion, an important discussion in this day and hour. And it even has ramifications for political overtones and issues and more. We should have you back to talk about that very thing. That would be a fun time. We'd love to have you back, Nancy. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
This is Roger Marsh, and I pray that these broadcasts over the past couple of days have really spoken to you. When we face arguments about our faith, we can be confident in the truth of Scripture. You'll want to learn more about this as you read Professor Piercy's book, Love Thy Body. It's full of heartfelt stories and lessons that are incredibly applicable to families in the 21st century. Visit our broadcast page for a link to this best-selling book. Go to drjamesdobson.org and then click onto today's broadcast tab. Well, that's all the time we have for this week here on Family Talk. We are so grateful for your consistent prayers and your faithful financial support of this ministry. Your generous gifts allow us to continue defending the family in the public square. Learn how you can stand with us by going to drjamesdobson.org. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for listening. Join us again Monday for another edition of Family Talk. Have a blessed weekend.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
This is James Dobson again. Before we go, I'd like to remind you that Family Talk is a listener-supported program. If you've enjoyed this broadcast, we'd appreciate your helping to keep us on the air. Thank you so much for listening and for being part of this ministry. For more information, go to drjamesdobson.org.